everyone. This is Krista, and thank you for tuning in to Travel Talk. I would like to give a big thank you to the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired for the opportunity to be your host today. And a big thank you to purpleplanetmusic.com for our theme song. I hope you are having a very fun and restful summer. I have found some really interesting articles from this summer's Condé Nast Traveler magazine, and it's the cruise issue, actually, for July-August 2019. And they say, welcome to the cruise issue of Condé Nast Traveler. Inside, we have 58 itineraries for seafaring adventures, whether you've got 8 days or 8 months. Can you imagine being on the water for 8 months? Golly. Well, while we're not going to get through all 58 itineraries, I do have some interesting articles picked out, including expedition cruises that take travelers to the world's most remote corners, 15 celebrities changing the way we cruise today, and then if we have time, how Aristotle Onassis designed the world's first super yacht. So some very, very interesting stuff this week. So we can dive right in. This article is from Janice Wald Henderson, and it's entitled, These New Expedition Cruises Take Travelers to the World's Most Remote Corners. Expedition-style ships with plenty of creature comforts are rewriting the rules when it comes to where travelers can go around the world. And she wrote this, it says, June 28th, 2019. We stand swaddled against the bitter chill on a tiny ship platform. The whipping wind and churning seas set the Zodiac bobbing up and down, like a cork on the water. There are 12 of us strapped into the boat. Our driver, an auburn-haired Aussie marine biologist, fearless and cheery, starts the motor. This is her 11th Antarctic cruise, but her enthusiasm matches that of the first-timers. When a humpback suddenly breaches in a graceful arch beside us, we gasp and she whoops with joy, weaving the boat between icebergs and bringing us shockingly close to a leopard seal on top of the ice. It's so close, we see its whiskers twitch as it sleeps. We stand up one by one to keep the boat steady, snapping the first of thousands of Antarctic photos. Expedition team members await our arrival in the frigid water near the peninsula landing spot to help us wade to the relative stability of the rocky shore. I stop here, astounded by the hundreds of penguins on snowy cliffs. Their sounds, peeps, moans, and donkey-like brays bounce off the mountains. We climb the Penguin Highway, a path through the snow the birds create to waddle and hop along between nests and sea. In my parka, I'm grinning like a fool. The shores of Antarctica and other near-impossible-to-reach places are getting easier to access with the rise of the expedition-style cruise. It's intimate and exploratory, a way to navigate the world that scratches an itch similar to the one that led us in our younger years to backpack into the wild, underexplored stretches of the planet. These ships generally have only around 200 passengers on board. Mine includes an intrepid set of established world travelers, from urbanites to academics to empty nesters with time and savings to burn. Travel now largely prioritizes experience over material, so it's no surprise that most of the top lines are getting in on the action, including Silversea, whose compact silver cloud is the one zipping me within feet of those napping seals. Squeezes us through the Antarctic tributaries that empty into the cold South Pacific. Plus, passengers don't need to remove themselves from the epic nature once they shuffle back on board. Bundled up in hats and gloves, we can eat steaks cooked outdoors over a lava stone at the grill, followed by a dip in the heated outdoor pool. Even at midnight, the sun here shines brightly, reflecting off the glistening walls of ice. It creates swirling shades of purple, orange, and pink in the sky. As expedition cruising booms in popularity, ships are becoming ever more competitive with their offerings. With major luxury lines hopping on board and the submarine becoming the new must-have toy, On Crystal Endeavor, the first ship of this type from service-obsessed Crystal Cruises, the 200 guests won't just get butlers and Nobu sushi, but also have access to 2 helicopters, 18 Zodiacs, and a 6-person submersible, which will be dropping into the seal-filled waters off the wildly evocative Russian island of Tylini on the ship's maiden voyage in August 2020. Seabourn, another line known for more conventional luxury, is laying even more toys on its all-suite 264-passenger Seabourn Adventure, which goes to Antarctica in June 2021 with a team of 26 specialists, 24 Zodiacs, and 2 custom submarines. This trend reflects the changing tastes of the 1% who are looking beyond plush comfort in search of extreme experiences. Senses, the 5-deck expedition yacht owned by Google co-founder Larry Page, might have a slick white Philip Stark interior, but the real selling point is the arsenal of high-speed tenders and jet skis parked by the helipad. It can be chartered for $343,000 a week. Wow. Cloudbreak, the 240-foot yacht owned by Russian property billionaire Alexander Svetikov, and yours for $835,000 a week, has a ski room with a cinema screen so that returning heliskiers can watch GoPro footage of their exploits. It's not all helicopters, though. While there's a growing emphasis on taking cruise passengers to wild, untouched corners of the planet, there's also an increasing environmental awareness among operators. Hurtigruten's scan-to-minimal 530-guest Roald Amundsen, which launched this year with a series of Antarctic and South American cruises, uses a hybrid engine that has reduced fuel consumption and CO2 emissions by 20%. The National Geographic Endurance, named after polar explorer Ernest Shackleton's ship, which launches next year in partnership with Lindblad Expeditions, is designed for maximal fuel and water efficiency, with the restaurant promising to use local ingredients from the ship's ports. Back on the Silver Cloud, there seems to be expeditions leaving all the time for vigorous snowshoe hikes on the ice or kayaking explorations in watertight bodysuits. Led by a 22-member team packed with PhDs, I happened to be having a private photography lesson on one of the Zodiacs when a mink whale breaches and I capture that moment of serendipity. Though the most magical moment is walking alone on this hostile continent with just the company of 100 Gentoo penguins honking a great chorus that induces shivers of awe, this, ultimately, is what expedition cruising is about. Not conquering, but being lucky enough to see and to listen. To really listen. Well, that was fascinating. I feel like in this hot, humid summer that we're having, it's nice to read about Antarctica and all it has to offer. Our next cruising story from the Condé Nast Traveler is 15 celebrities changing the way we cruise today. Oprah, Jon Bon Jovi, Belle & Sebastian, and more can now be found on the high seas. And this was written by Emma Love on July 1st, 2019. First, they discuss Belle and Sebastian, which I believe they're kind of an alternative, more folk music group. The whimsical Glasgow indie rockers have always liked their festivals to be a bit different. In 1999, the band had just won the Best British Newcomer Awards at the Brits, the UK's answer to the Grammys, when they organized the Bowley Weekender, an ahead-of-its-time antidote to the mud and crowds of most British festivals, in Seaside, Sussex. Two decades on, they're at it again, this time with the Bowley Weekender, a 4-night cruise in August from Barcelona to Sardinia on the 2,394-passenger Norwegian Pearl, which has also hosted the likes of Kiss, Kesha, and the Shiprocked Festival. That sounds fun. For this one, Mogwai, Yola Tango, and fellow Glaswegians Teenage Fan Club will also take to the ship's 5 stages as part of a lineup heavy on the left field indie. Besides the music and the Pearl's bowling alley and Autre Bliss nightclub, there'll be themed balls, Scrabble tournaments, and yoga classes led by Frances McKee of Glaswegian alt rockers The Vaseline's. No rain boots or camping tents required. Next is Oprah Winfrey. She might be considered the godmother of many things: talk shows, self-help, female empowerment, the list goes on. And now, one of the nation's richest self-made women, once dubbed the queen of all media, is the official godmother of a cruise ship, Holland America's 2,650-passenger Niwu Statendam, when she launched the ship with a one-off girls' getaway cruise to the Caribbean earlier this year. It sold out in minutes, barely longer than the standing ovation after her rousing speech at last year's Golden Globes. Now guests get a series of programs inspired by O, the Oprah magazine, from meaningful meditation and energizing movement sessions by the pool to O-approved transformational videos and an Oprah reading room, a nod to her wildly influential book club. Winfrey has been working with Holland America for a few years, curating a series of adventure-of-your-life voyages, most recently a trip to Alaska with experts including wisdom teacher Shefali Tazabiri and sound bathing therapist Sarah Osterer. Cruising like politics, television, and social media has entered Oprah's orbit. And next we have Jon Bon Jovi. When it comes to entertainment at sea, oceangoers may be more familiar with a certain type of tuxedo-clad crooner, inspired by Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett, but if any cruise line was going to invite the stadium-filling New Jersey-born singer behind Slippery When Wet on board, it was Norwegian. The line has graffiti-styled murals, rock-climbing walls, and no dress codes on its ships, preferring to encourage informal freestyle gatherings. The Bon Jovi frontman will be headlining the Runaway to Paradise voyage from Barcelona to Palma, Mallorca on the Norwegian Pearl in August, performing a full-blown concert backed by an 11-piece band on the pool deck. There's also an acoustic set during which he'll take questions from the audience. Accompanied by longtime tour photographer David Bergman and producer Obie O'Brien, as for his dress code, that's easy. The singer has worn the same Reebok Allen Inversion sneakers on stage for the past 15 years. Oh, interesting. Next is Adam D. Tihany. What does it take to design the interior of a cruise ship? The ability to handle bewilderingly large areas, certainly, and match flag-flyingly bold statements with quiet, composed personal spaces. Enter Tihany, who fuses Italian finesse with Vegas-style showmanship, making his name with the projects such as the Beverly Hills Hotel and restaurants for Wolfgang Puck and Daniel Boulud. But the ocean brought fresh challenges. For example, how to prevent engine vibration from rattling the wine bottles? The answer? Mount the racks on gyroscopes with plush modern looks for the seaborne encores and ovation under his belt. Tihany now has the line's expedition fleet in his sights, as well as a more contemporary ship for Cunard, launching in 2022. But first, down the slipway in November is Costa Cruises' graceful Costa Smeralda, which will have a museum devoted to Italian style. David Lindley is next. The first item of furniture that Lindley ever made at age 14 was a desk crafted out of a single piece of plywood, which he keeps in his 19th century hunting lodge in Provence. Since then, he's used his talents to furnish suites at the Clare Ridges and create bespoke designs such as the Torque dining table unveiled at Masterpiece London's art fair last year. Its swirling veneers inspired by the Guggenheim Museum in New York, but the largest work his studio has made can be viewed on board Cunard's Queen Elizabeth on the wall of the Art Deco-style Grand Lobby. Formed from 9 different types of wood, including walnut, sycamore, and maple, the 18-foot-high panel depicts the bow of the first Elizabeth, launched in 1938 by his grandmother, the British Queen Mother. The two were regularly close and attended church together. That ship was set on fire by arsonists in Hong Kong in 1972, though not before making a guest appearance in 007's The Man with the Golden Gun. But its successor continues to evoke the golden age of cruising. Lindley's incredible piece of marquetry is a neat fit for this grand dame. Next is Roman and Williams. Husband and wife team Stephen Alsh and Robin Standifer spent a decade designing Hollywood film sets together before Ben Stiller tapped them to renovate his Spanish-style L.A. home after working with the couple on Zoolander and Duplex. A flood of power clients followed, Gwyneth Paltrow, Kate Hudson, and a set of hipster hotels, including Ace Hotel New York, the Standard High Line, and Freehand Los Angeles. Now the duo is taking on cruise ships, specifically Virgin Voyages' Scarlet Lady, due to launch next year. The company's first foray onto the high seas bills itself as a 24/7 festival at sea, with banjo drag shows, a tattoo parlor, and a vinyl store. The pair will oversee a Mad Men-style steakhouse, a cocktail and cabana joint, and a theatrical nightclub inspired by 1970s discos. Expect them to be really, really ridiculously good-looking. Next is Patricia Urquiola. Over the past two decades, the prolific Spanish-born designer and architect has quietly become one of the most successful names in her field. Her ergonomic creations are playful yet have real substance, often experimenting with color and contours. You may have tiptoed across her geometric ceramic tiles dropped into the Scandi-inspired Lila Lounge chairs she made from Mascaro, or admire her floaty Snow White cutouts at Mandarin Oriental Barcelona. Urquiola's Fjord armchair is part of the permanent collection at MoMA and the hotel Il Sereno, whose interiors she designed, was the most anticipated opening on the shores of Lake Como in years. So it was a coup when Celebrity Cruises persuaded her to add her name to the design roll call for its pioneering Celebrity Edge ship. The line has always had fun with its cruises, going the extra mile in the way staff interact with passengers, and deftly upscaling the small boat experience. The billion-dollar Edge is a game-changer that aims to disrupt dusty preconceptions about cruising. There are immersive theater shows, botanical-inspired cocktails, a drone obstacle course, and the open-air magic carpet platforms, which scoots up and down decks outside the hull. As for Urquiola's contributions, well, she has given Mediterranean restaurant Cyprus a hot summer ambience and planted a towering installation of foliage above the bar at Eden, a hybrid space that mutates from daytime hangout to nocturnal performance venue. It's everything you never thought you'd see on a cruise ship, and that is exactly the point. Next is Irina Takahashi. Her muscular feet have leapt from the boards of many a British arts institution, from the Royal Albert Hall as Aurora in The Sleeping Beauty, to Glastonbury Festival's Pyramid Stage and Akram Khan's World War I elegy, Dust. As lead principal of the English National Ballet, the Japanese-born dancer embodies the chameleonic spirit of today's not only classic ballerina. In 2007, she danced the lead in Swan Lake at the Mayflower Theater in Southampton. In 2015, she performed a duet to Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody for the song's 40th anniversary. This August, Takahashi returns to Southampton to springboard from boards of another royal national treasure, the Royal Court Theatre of Cunard's Queen Mary II, in whose stately ballrooms British naval etiquette and white glove service are still cordially preserved. Over a seven-night crossing to New York, the liner will become a floating dance company, where the Corps de Ballet will perform Tchaikovsky's work somewhere along the North Atlantic, along with Adolf Adams' Le Corsair and Khan's Dust. The program includes talks by names such as Merritt Moore, a prima ballerina and quantum physicist, and daily access to classes and rehearsals. This is the ultimate high arts experience on water. I'm actually going to skip a few. Here's another, though. Thomas Keller, the only American chef to scoop three-star Michelin ratings for two restaurants at once, the French Laundry and Per Se, wants to be clear, we're not a ship restaurant, we're a restaurant on a ship, Keller says about The Grill by Thomas Keller, which opened on the Seabourn Quest in 2016. This outlook fits neatly into Seabourn's five-strong fleet. Keller's chefs remain on board, arriving tableside to carve roast chicken with thyme and deftly toss Caesar salads and ensuring the same level of perfection as his addresses on dry land, the latest of which Tack Room in New York's Hudson Yards is his first in NYC in 15 years. Keller helped define the American destination restaurant for generations of foodies, only now those destinations keep changing. And our last entry will be Andrew Weil. When Seaborne needed someone to help develop a fleet-wide mindful living program, it settled on a man whose undergrad thesis was on the narcotic properties of nutmeg. The Santa-bearded Weil is a medical visionary who takes a multi-pronged approach to healing, embracing anti-inflammatory foods, healthy aging, and spontaneous happiness, all inspired by extensive research. He can usually be found in Tucson at the University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine, which he founded, but in November he will lead a wellness voyage from Athens to Dubai on the Seaborne Ovation, followed by one around the South Pacific in 2020 on the Seaborne Encore. Together with a handful of professors and expert physicians, he will host workshops, shore excursions — in the past these have included hikes to blow away the cobwebs — and discussions on traditional energy healing paradigms and how mind and spirit affect our quality of health. A steadying, grounding experience despite being on the water. Now, our last story today from the Condé Nast Traveler July-August issue was written by Toby Skinner on July 2nd, 2019. And because this issue has to deal with cruises, his story is called How Aristotle Onassis Designed the World's First Super Yacht. It says the original super yacht is available to rent once again. Well, that's exciting. I have not personally been on a yacht, but I think it would be very interesting to do that. It seems like a yacht is just a very big boat, but not quite as big as a cruise ship. I'm looking forward to hearing more about this because I did hear that this is a super yacht and is truly incredible. Okay, here we go. Before the Christina O, the super yacht as we know it wasn't a thing. But in 1954, the shipping magnate Aristotle Onassis happened upon a slender, elegantly shaped anti-submarine frigate that had served at the D-Day landings and paid its scrap value of $34,000. What happened next was typical of the Golden Greek. Naming the boat after his daughter, he spent almost $4 million creating the original floating pleasure palace, adding revolutionary touches like a helipad and the mosaic-tiled bottom of a seawater pool that would rise to become a dance floor at the touch of a button. Soon Frank Sinatra was playing the Steinway or flirting with Marilyn Monroe on bar stools made of whale foreskins at Ari's Bar, where Winston Churchill is said to have thought that a young John F. Kennedy was a waiter when they first met in the mid-1950s. For all that went down on the 325-foot Christina O, the ship itself was influential, providing a blueprint for both design and hedonism to a generation of super yachts, especially those of fledgling boat designer Jan Vandenberg, whose interior design of Talitha G for the Getty family owed a debt to this original. After Onassis's death in 1975, Christina Onassis donated her namesake to the Greek government, and the ship was allowed to decay until a 2001 overhaul, followed by another restoration 15 years later. Now it's available to rent. If only those Spanish galleon timber walls could talk. And it says the Christina O can be chartered for $624,500 a week through Morley Yachts. And if you have that kind of money and want to spend it on renting the Christina O, it's Morley, M-O-R-L-E-Y, Yachts, and you can visit them online. And I am completely free to attend your party on that yacht. Well, I know we've been talking about cruising, but we have time for just one more tidbit, which I found very interesting. If you like Disney World and you like Star Wars, this is from a publication called Fatherly. And if you know anyone that's going to Disneyland for the new Star Wars ride, you might want to tell them to hold off because they're not opening their newest ride until 2020. And this was written July 14th by Catherine Santino. And she says, Star Wars fans are going to have to wait a bit longer for the opening of the highly anticipated Rise of the Resistance ride. The immersive experience is set to take over Disney World in Orlando on December 5th, which also happens to be Walt Disney's birthday, but won't land in Anaheim's Disneyland until January 17th, 2020. The new addition to the park's Galaxy's Edge was announced in May and initially expected to open by the end of 2019. Given that the Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run Space Flight Simulator is currently the only Star Wars-themed ride open at Galaxy's Edge, some parkgoers are a tad disappointed. These are not the dates we're looking for, a disgruntled fan cleverly wrote on Twitter. And they say if you want to stay up to date on this and other rides, check out the Disney Parks blog. Well, thanks again for listening to Travel Talk this week. A big thank you again to the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired for the opportunity to be with you today. And thanks to purpleplanetmusic.com for our theme. I do hope that you have a great week and enjoy all that this world has to offer, and I look forward to having you back with me again for Travel Talk next week. Have a great one.